White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Center in Mineral Point, Missouri. My name is Melissa Powers. I'm with the prosecutor's office for Hamilton County. I'm an assistant prosecutor here with Joseph Franklin. We're here to talk about the Cincinnati case. What can you tell me about that, Joseph?
Well, I did it. The only thing I can say is I did it.
And can you also tell me why you did it? Was there any reason?
Let's see. Well, my lead, at the time, I was trying to get rid of all the ugly people in the world.
Okay.
And,
why did you select?
I considered the blacks the ugliest people of all.
How did you select?
So that's basically the idea, just trying to, get rid of the ugly people. And,
okay, let's start off. What brought
that
you?
That was my mindset at the time.
Okay.
Know?
What brought you to Cincinnati, Ohio back in June of 1980?
First place?
Right.
And one thing, I wanted to sell a rifle. I had a .30-06 rifle I wanted to sell, which I did run ahead in the newspaper for.
Okay.
The Inquirer.
Cincinnati paper?
Yeah. I did. That is true that I ran the ad in the paper. However, that ad ran for, I guess, just a short time. And, I also ran another ad to sell electric guitar and amplifier. You probably heard about that one, too.
I did. Did you play music?
I did. Well, I was trying to practice it, and on that one. But
did you sell either one of those items?
I did sell a guitar and amplifier to a lady, but the rifle I did not sell.
Okay, let's talk about the ad you ran for the stereo.
Okay, let me tell you what I did with the rifle first, okay? This will clear a lot of things up.
All right.
Okay, I took the rifle since I couldn't sell it. In fact, I don't think I even got any calls on it. It was a bolt-action type rifle, a model 700 Remington. And I didn't realize until after I bought the rifle, I can't shoot a rifle like that. I have to have an automatic, or a slide action pump, or a lever action, like the little Marlins and Winchesters, because I'm blind in the right eye, and nearsighted in the other one, so I could not use that bolt action. They're made for right-handed shooters.
You have to shoot left-handed?
Yeah, just same as a left-handed person shoots.
Okay.
It just comes natural to me. It's what I've been doing for years. And so, after I could not sell the rifle, I decided to leave and went up to Columbus, Ohio, just leave the state, So, haven't been to Columbus a couple of times.
Leave what state?
I decided to leave Ohio.
Okay.
And in a round, I stopped to Columbus.
Okay.
The capital. And I'd been up there looking for Larry Flynn a couple of times, so I was familiar with the area. I'd also robbed a bank right off of High Street in 77, 3 years previous to that. And I just took the gun up to a gun store, looked up a gun store in the phone book, and sold a rifle to a gun store. There's the corner.
How did you carry that .30-06 rifle?
Huh?
How did you carry that rifle? Was it in any type of
game? I had it in a gun case, yeah. I usually keep the guns in a gun case.
At some point,
wait a minute. No, I didn't even have it. I remember the rifle was scratched, so that's why I was able to get so little for it. At the gun store?
Do you remember the name of the gun store?
Heck no, no.
Okay.
That would have been possible. But I do recall I laid it in the trunk. You know, I keep it in the trunk. And so it had been scratched some, so that, you know, depreciated it a lot. So.
Did anybody, you said you got no calls?
No, I took good care of the guns, but this one here, I just didn't have it in a case.
Okay.
I just didn't like the rifle.
Did you put it in any type of, in any other type of case?
I think I just took it inside. I may have wrapped it in something on the way in there, but I haven't really thought about it lately, but I think what I did was just carry it in the gun store. That's allowed if you're walking from your car to a gun store in most states. And so after I left there, I went to Johnstown, Pennsylvania. That's where I committed another sniper and killed an interracial couple there.
Okay, let me take you back. Let's talk about Cincinnati.
June was the most prolific. I was most prolific as far as murders go in that month. I committed 6 murders. A big chunk of all the ones I eventually committed in the whole 3 years, I committed right there in those 3 months. You know, first the Cincinnati murders, you said that was June 8th?
Yes.
Okay, then a couple weeks later I committed the Johnstown, Pennsylvania snipings, you know?
Right.
And then a couple weeks or so later I committed the Rainbow murders, you know? Prior to that I robbed a bank, too, so it was all 6 murders and 1 bank robbery all within the month. That 1 month, June of 1980. So, what happened was I was just getting very upset because the news media, the national media, wasn't covering what I was doing. They were pretty well suppressing the news. I don't know, I guess they're afraid to start a race war or something. And that's what I was trying to do. I just decided to just turn up the heat a little bit, just start committing more killings, and, you know, just to try to force them to give me publicity because they didn't want to publicize what I was doing. And, you know, I found out later through an article in the Washington Post that they were finally began to connect the Vernon George shooting, the Cincinnati shooting, and Johnstown, Pennsylvania shootings, too, because they happened within such a short period. You know, I did get an article about it in the Post, you know, of course, not naming me.
Right.
But, you know, I thought that was, you know, that was good, you know, so I decided to just keep it up, and then shortly afterwards I went back to Florence, Kentucky, and then from there to Utah, where I committed the Utah killings and snipings, you know,
right,
for which I've been convicted of. But anyway, that's what happened to the rifle.
Okay.
Did you want any more details on the Cincinnati case?
No, the rifle that you just described is the rifle that you used. That's not the same rifle that you used to commit this. Right.
No.
Okay, what happened?
The one I used was a .44 Magnum Ruger, and it was an automatic, one that I could shoot.
Okay.
Because of my vision.
Right. All right. Do you remember what type of shells that you used?
Let's see. It was the same, they take the same type that go on the pistol, I'm pretty sure. You know, I forget exactly what grain bullet it was or what make bullet, you know. But I do recall loading it, you know, and getting an escape route and all that right off the railroad tracks, you know, during the daytime. I think there was only one guy that saw me. It was some white guy that happened to be down the road. I was kind of just, you know, reconnoitering the area, you know, that afternoon. And I was standing right there on the railroad tracks at the time. I knew, you know, my hair at the time was, you know, really light brown, blonde, you know. I knew I would stand out because of that. And kind of long, you know, like car length, you know, not really long. So I just turned my head and kind of ducked. And I was really thinking of actually just forgetting it and leaving because that one guy saw me there, you know.
When did he saw you? During the daytime?
During the daytime, yeah.
And was there. You were on the railroad tracks? Where was he?
He was down on the street, and I was just down on top. I was actually, I think, right on the rails at the time. that's the only guy who even could possibly have saw me. He could even have got a glimpse of me. Everything else, no one saw me at all. You know, it's like a lot of the other cases I was in. It's like, you know, I may as well have been invisible as far as the authorities went, because no one saw me. No one got a description of the car or anything.
What did you do?
You know, the rifle I destroyed afterwards.
When did you arrive, and where did you stay when you came to Cincinnati?
Let's see. I think I was in that particular motel where I sold the guitar and the amplifier. I think it was called the Cane Tuck Motel, if I'm not sure.
Where's that located?
In Florence, Kentucky.
Okay. Do you recall when you arrived?
It's kind of a version of the word Kentucky, just a kind of a country type version of the word Kentucky. I think it was Cane Tuck.
Okay.
You know, motel.
Okay. What about the date that you arrived around?
I'd been there for about a week before that. I'd been, you know, right from Indianapolis, where I've spent a little time.
Okay.
You know, before that, though, of course, I committed the Vernon George shooting.
Right, in Fort Wayne.
Yeah, it is. So, when that first hit the news, they said that was they said that the reason Jordan got shot was because he was involved in a love triangle with some people. You know, they didn't even want to make that appear racially motivated either. So the first thing they said was, you know, there was a love triangle. Jordan was involved with somebody else's wife. So that kind of pissed me off too, because the media was just flat out lying then. So
they probably didn't know.
No, I think they were deliberately doing it.
I see. Okay.
I'm surprised.
I agree with you.
The government basically controls the media in this country. You know, to a large extent, the media is government controlled.
Now, you talked about that there was a woman that you sold the guitar and the amplifier.
Some lady, I'd say she's been about 30, 35.
Do you remember when she came to look at the
guitar? Kind of a housewife-looking type lady.
Was it before or after you had committed the murder in Cincinnati?
Let's see. I believe that was just a day or so before.
Did you talk to her or show her any guns or anything?
I don't think I showed her, you know. There was no need to. She just knocked on the door. I told her, you know, she called up and I gave her directions to the motel, you know. And she just, knocked on the door. I let her in just to see the guitar and amplifier. She kind of just stood there. Yeah, you know, never took a seat at all the time she was there. While we discussed the price and all that, she told me she was getting it for a little boy, a neighborhood boy, you know, kid. So I said, okay. So I sold it at a really, you know, inexpensive rate.
Do you remember?
I told her, I said, I would just give it to you if I just didn't need the money right now.
Did she give you, did she pay cash?
Yes, she did. I would not have taken a check, because then I would have had to cash it. That would have required me producing ID. I didn't do that sort of thing at all. Just to kind of avoid detection.
What name did you use when you registered at the hotel in Florence?
Probably Joseph something. I used the first name Joseph a lot. Okay. Joseph Hart was one of my most common aliases.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That was one of William Quantrill's aliases too, so Hart. And I got it from him.
Was there any planning involved in the murder that you committed in Cincinnati?
Other than just going over my escape route. Yeah.
How did you select that area?
How?
Right.
What do you mean?
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about your escape route.
Yeah, okay. What I did was, a little ways down the railroad, was a business there that faced the street. And to the right of that, there was a parking lot there. So I just backed the car in there. You know, I had the front facing outward so I could just drive on off when I was through. You know. So I found that walking down the railroad track, like the railroad track is right here. This is where the snipings occurred. I had to run you know, down this way here.
To the left?
No, to the right to get to the car.
Okay.
But it was, the path there was just, there was so much shrubbery and stuff, you could not even see it hardly from the railroad tracks, barely. So I put a big something there, I put a big piece of paper or something to mark where my skate route was, so I wouldn't run past it because it was just so hard to see, you know, especially at night, you know. And so, you know, I just ran there, and once I saw the mark there, I just hung a quick right, threw the rifle in the trunk, which I was able to do unobserved. You know, the business was closed, and, you know, just drove one out of there.
What kind of car
were you? I may draw a map for you a little later on.
That'd be great. What kind of car were you using?
That's when I had this black Chevy Nova. I was going to point out to you some of the mistakes on that timetable there. I'll do that a little later.
All right.
Some of them, you know, gave a description of the car at different times. That and other cars that I was using that were inaccurate, you know.
Was there anything unique about that Chevy Nova?
Well, it had mag wheels. The back end of it was jacked up at the back. Mag wheels and all that.
CB antenna?
No, it's no CB.
No CB?
No. It looked kind of like a souped up race car type, you know, style. You know what I'm saying?
Right. What was the color again?
Black.
Okay.
All black. Black interior. The one girl there, Kathy Sewell, she described it as a 76 black Malibu or something like that, but it wasn't black at all. I mean, it wasn't a 76 at all, it was a 71 Nova that I had painted down in Marietta, Georgia. See, what it was, I had the car, when I bought the car in Georgia, initially it was light blue, and so that bimbo who said that she saw me with a CB, you know, and that Chevy,
okay,
saw me, that was, actually saw me in January, you know. She was just a woman, I remember picking her up, she used to pick men up on the interstate with her CBs, you know.
Did you ever meet her in person?
I actually sat in the car next to her.
Where'd that occur at?
Right there in a little Kentucky suburb. Florence, I guess it was, near the mall, Florence Mall.
Was it like in a gas station?
No, we didn't go to, we were at a shopping center.
Okay.
You know, she had that wrong also, you know. But, you know, why she would lie about that, I don't know, you know, but she said that she had saw me at a gas station, but it was at a shopping center parking lot, you know. She, like I said, she was just you know, Bimbo, who used to go around picking up men, she was married too, you know, stepping in on her husband, you know, on the freeway, and I was just one of the men that she had, you know, to stop, you know, and meet, you know what I'm saying?
Did you show
her?
Evening,
huh?
When was that, January 1980? Is that what you said?
January 1980. That was the first time I'd ever been to Indianapolis, so I remember, I recall that because I had my CB then, and the car was light blue at the time, you know. And, you know, I eventually got rid of that CB, you know,
but you
trashed it. I did not have one with the black Nova.
Okay, so you didn't have the CB or CB antenna on your car back in June of 1980.
No, well, see, what if she saw me with the CB, you know, I met her through the CB.
Right.
But once we met and talked, once she heard, I guess the police must have told her to, or suggested that she set the date up to June 7th, which our age, whenever she was supposed to saw me, you know. But it's really, you know, just to make it look like, you know, she saw me on that particular day. But really, I saw her early, way in January, in the first of the year.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
Because what makes it so easy for me to remember was my car was blue at the time in January, you know. After I left Indianapolis, I decided to go down to Georgia and I painted the car black, you know, because the car, because of, you know, some stuff I'd done in Indianapolis, it was a hot car there, so I wanted to change the whole color of the car, you know, which I did, and plus, by the time June come along, I'll even look different myself, my hair. You know, I got a new pair of glasses, different style and all that. My hair was a different length and color and all that. So I looked, different clothes. I would buy different clothes and trash the ones that I committed a crime in,
Right.
So they could never tie me, to a crime with those, Tennis shoes, if I left any tracks, I would just, usually throw away a brand new pair of shoes just so they could trace me to it.
Did you do anything like that with the Cincinnati case? Or you did that in every case? Do you remember?
Oh, every single case.
So, and since you got rid of all the clothing that you had worn and shoes?
Let's see, let me think. I really haven't thought of the specifics on this one in a long time, So, I have to try to jog my memory here. I cannot even recall specifically destroying that weapon. I know I did it because that was standard procedure, to destroy a weapon after a crime or sniping was committed. With the few exceptions, as I mentioned earlier, being this one here in Richmond Heights, and I can't recall specifically do that. The only thing I do remember buying the gun though in Louisville, Kentucky.
And what type of gun was it again?
Ruger, a little short Ruger automatic.
Okay.
44 Magnum.
So you bought it down in Louisville?
Louisville, yeah.
But you destroyed
either
this
through
gun.
A newspaper ad or through one of those advertising papers like the Bargain Post or Trading Times, whatever.
Did you ever sell any of your weapons in the newspaper? After ones that were used to commit sniper shootings?
Not in the newspaper, no.
Okay.
No, I would not do that. I told a reporter at that time in Cincinnati. That was disinformation I was feeding to her.
I see.
I did not go around. I didn't even make my living at that time buying and selling guns like I told them.
Oh, I see.
That's what I told the FBI, everybody, just to cover up for the bank robberies. But, no, I would never take a chance on doing that. That gun in the Georgia shooting, I destroyed it. I would cut them off, carried a little black and decker drill around with me all the time. Various tools, screwdrivers and all that. I would take them all apart and cut the barrel in half, actually grind it in half, and then take it and destroy it, scatter the parts of it in different places. I would take apart what I could with the tools,
I see.
And what I could take apart with the tools, would basically be the barrel and the part, the thick part underneath the forearm, and I would just cut that in half. Just go trash each one in different places.
Okay. Now, were you at the location of the scene of that train trestle where the sniper shooting was committed? Just the day of the shooting? Or were you around that area any other days?
I didn't spend very much time there at that scene. Hard to recall that.
Is there a reason why you picked the train trestle as a location?
I knew that there was a racially mixed neighborhood. I frequently operated in racially mixed neighborhoods,
How'd you get that information that was racially mixed? Did you just drive around, or people tell you?
Just through cruising. I would cruise around looking for places like that.
Did you see anything like that back in June of 1980 in Cincinnati? Well, what gave you the impression that area or that neighborhood was racially mixed?
I just recall driving through there and seeing blacks, I guess. And whites also.
Okay.
I didn't want a totally black neighborhood because then I would be really conspicuous,
Right.
I would never, operate inside of a, black neighborhood I never went into, at least not on purpose. I may have accidentally wound up in it, but I would try to get out, because I would just be too obvious in a black neighborhood. If it's a racially mixed, it's ideal because you don't stand out. You've got your targets there, i.e. the blacks and the, MRCs, mixed race couples.
Yes.
So, basically, but then, but still, you don't stand out either, just being a white male.
Sure. So, Do you recall the time that you arrived at the train trestle that night? Around?
I had a long time to wait, you know. I was basically just waiting for the first blacks or interracial couples to come by.
Did you see any?
What?
MRCs?
No, I did not see any of those. That would have been ideal. I prefer those. You know, I got one of those in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, like I was saying.
Right.
You know, but at that time I was waiting for anything too. I had that whole area staked up. Let me go and run this down to you real quick, okay?
All right.
Because the policeman, if the policeman at jurisdiction want to talk to me, I'll give them a report to confession, okay. You know. Anyway, this was just, like I said, shortly after the Cincinnati case, I was there. But I spent a lot of time in that particular area in Johnstown. I actually saw somebody, or, you know, viewed me there too, you know, somebody saw me there. But I squatted down on the ground, turned around, squatted down on the ground, and I made it out like I was riding something on the, you know, road, you know. It was like a dirt road down that area. So evidently they saw me not looking at them, and they kept on going, you know. But they did see the car. I spent several days there, which was really not a wise thing to do, you know. Just kind of looking for a place, you know, position. And I just had this area staked out with a 35 caliber rifle. I do recall that. It's a really big green weapon, large grain weapon, Remington tank, you know. And, you know, I just kept waiting there. By the way, I wasn't lying down there either. I was just sitting down there, crouched, you know, with the rifle. I think I just rested the rifle right on my knee while I was, you know, talking, you know, that typical military type stance. But I was really getting desperate for a target when all of a sudden I happened to look through the scope. You know, I would have shot the first black to come by. You know, I would have just been satisfied with shooting a black person, you know. But, you know, then there were, you know, well, I don't want to get into that, but eventually I just happened to be glancing through the scope and could not believe my eyes when an interracial couple passed by. You know, there was some road, and I just, you know, I wanted to make sure they were together. They were kind of separate as they crossed the street, but then I saw that they were actually, in fact, together, you know, standing, and they were crossing right on that bridge, crossing over a bridge over there. So I just threw the gun up on my knee, man, just fired really quick, you know, just before they could get out of my view, you know. By the way, there's a lot of traffic stopped right there, too. I was actually at a main intersection on the side of a hill, shooting from a hill, you know, inside of a bunch of, you know, bushes and trees and all that, you know, so people listening could have viewed it, had no idea where the shots were coming from, you know. Nobody ever looked my way. That's the thing about sniping, they never can tell where the shots are coming from, where you're at, you know. So that's one reason it's so easy to get away with, you know, that type of murders, you know, sniping, right, like that. So anyway, I just, like I usually do, I just put the gun on the black guy at first. I remember he had a baseball cap on, you know, and fired the first shot off as fast as I could. But I missed the dude. And wait, No, I got him, I tagged him on the first one. It was a hit on the first shot. You know, I put it on there very carefully and shot. Yeah, it was the one I fired a quick shot with at the broad, you know, the girl that was with him. It was some blonde or kind of a dumb-looking broad, you know, goofy-looking. And so I got him on that one shot, and he just rolled over right off the sidewalk onto the gutter. And it was a pump action, you know, with the form, you know, the slide action at the front, you know. So I racked the action real quick and fired a quick shot at her before she could get away. And I wound up missing her. I found out later the shot just took a big chunk out of the bridge, you know, but missed her. But she remained standing there, you know. You know, usually if I shot the woman first, the black would usually run off, and I wouldn't get a chance to get him, you know. This is what I found out starting out. So I changed from then on and always shot the black guy first. Because when she was standing there, she would always stay with him and try to help him, but he would always run off when she was shot, you know. So anyway, I got a good shot on the black guy, and, you know, missed her on the first shot, but she still stayed there, did not even run, you know, which is fortunate for me. But I just, you know, racked the action again and put it on her again, and this time I got her. And you know, she dropped right there. And I racked the action one more time and shot him again, and then one more time and shot her again. You know. So once I saw I got both of them, I just started running. You know, I just took off, truck, jumped in my car. You know, had a escape route already planned that I had planned out, so I took that right out and left. So, but I never did buy a rifle there. They mentioned there that I bought a gun there. I did not buy a rifle in Johnstown, Pennsylvania at all, a 30-06. I did buy a Remington 742, 30-06 automatic in Cincinnati, though.
You did?
I do, yeah, I will verify that. I bought it from a guy. In fact, I think it's one of the two 30-06s that they found in the trunk of my car. I think I still had that same 30-06. I had, in addition to that, that Marlin, and I got rid of it after Salt Lake City. So anyway, after I left there, I made a quick swing over to Washington, D.C. area, and didn't really stop there very long, you know, because I was kind of low on money. After I left there, I went and robbed that bank in Burlington, North Carolina. I spent, by the way, a few days there, too. Somebody was able to identify the Black Nova that I had because I'd been spending so much time in the area, you know. And I think they saw me leaving, too, is what the FBI said. It's one of the reports that somebody spotted the Black Nova. But after I left there, I headed, you know, directly over to north and went up to West Virginia, where I later picked up the two girls hitchhiking, right? And, well, actually, first I went to Virginia Beach, Virginia, and just stayed there just for a little while, about a couple of hours or so, and decided I didn't want to stay there. I left and went, I decided to go to Kentucky, so I just went and cut right through West Virginia, you know. And, you know, I picked those two girls up, and when they, you know, said that they had dated blacks or wood or whatever, you know, I kind of steered them onto the conversation, you know, just to see if they were race mixers.
Right.
You know, so.
I saw that interview that you gave Deborah about that.
Yeah, because earlier I'd done the same thing, you know, in Wisconsin, but be that as it may.
So tell me about Cincinnati.
Anyway, I wound up killing them.
Right.
And so it was, you know. Okay, well, all right.
So tell me how.
What do you want to know about that?
Well, tell me about Cincinnati.
Okay, well, you want to ask me any questions on it?
Well, just we've kind of talked about the train trestle. Mm-hmm. You were there
yeah,
earlier
Yeah, I remember
in the
a bunch of rocks when you were there. Yeah, go ahead.
You had an escape room.
Yeah.
And, but tell me about how long were you waiting when you were waiting to, or
well,
did you have,
I
did
had
you
an area staked out, you know, I would usually just stake an area out, just like there. Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Right.
The one, the Rainbow killings were a little different MO because I just picked them up hitchhiking, you know, something I had not planned.
Right.
You know.
But this one in Cincinnati.
But this one here, I had to stick down. It seemed like I had to sit there for at least an hour or two. It seemed like quite a long time, but I can't remember now because I don't remember checking the time at all, you know.
What did you say?
I kept staying there, and I would hear voices, you know, like it sounded like some blacks were around, but I couldn't, I couldn't see anybody walking by, you know. So finally I heard somebody yelling, and looked down there, and saw a couple of dudes coming down the sidewalk, you know. So, anyway, one of them was about my height. Taller than the other one was, I guess, 2 or 3 inches shorter than him, you know. I just put the gun right on the biggest dude first, you know, and, fired one shot with that 44 Magnum, And so, you know, I just heard somebody go, like a sound, like a, you know, like they just got shot, you know. And as soon as the other guy bolted, it was just like through a miracle that I got him, man, you know. I did not even aim the gun at him, man. I just, as soon as he heard that shot, he just bolted and started running. And I aimed the gun without even, just in the dark there, just hoping that I would get a lucky shot and hit him, you know. And sure enough, it actually got him, man.
So he turned around, the second one, the smaller one, turned around?
No, he didn't turn around.
Which way was he
running?
The
smallest guy. No, he was, the other guy was facing me, walking toward me. And the second one, when he started running, he bolted toward the street, like he was going to run across the street. You know, kind of at an angle, you know, not directly toward me, because then it would have been an easy hit, you know. He just kind of veered off to my left, you know, which would have taken him across the street. And it was just so fast, I would have never had time to aim, especially at night with a, you know, with a scope, the vision, you know, problem that I have. I could have never done it. So I just shot randomly, and I was just amazed when I read on the news that I hit both of them. I didn't even stop to look at them after. I just took off running, you know.
How many shots did you fire, Dave?
It seemed like I fired all. I think I fired at least three shots, maybe four. You know, it seemed like I fired just nearly all the whole clip, everything the gun held.
Now, in other cases,
but I'm not sure. I may have had one or two left over. I didn't want to. Once I saw they were down, I didn't want to stick around. You know, I just took off and started running. You know, I forget what I was wearing, but it seemed like I may have had some sort of military coat on at the time, too, a fatigue, a camouflage jacket or something like that. And, you know, a beach hat like the type I used to wear during bank robberies. You know, what I'm talking about, the little brim?
Right.
All that.
Right.
So, but anyway.
Did you, I know in other ones that you told me about, you shoot the one, then you shoot the second one, then you go back and shoot the first one.
Yeah.
Did you do anything like that in this one?
I believe I did shoot the first one again, you know. And, it seems I shot the second one also. I may have just shot each one at once just to make sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Because,
did you, go ahead.
Have a lot of, you know, otherwise, you know, it's very likely, you know, after that Larry Flint shooting, I wanted to make sure from then on, you know, because I wanted him, that I pretty well emptied the magazine into him, you know. Because, after Larry Flint shooting, I just became very upset about that, you know, about, you know, my shooting, you know, killing Larry Flint. And now I regret actually even shooting him now, you know. So, it was really a tragedy.
Well, you...
But at the time, I just wanted to, you know, just wanted to kill him really bad. I just considered if it was just wounded, I was a complete failure, you know.
Right. When, while you were waiting for a period, you were up on the train trestle for a period of time that evening.
There were a lot of rules.
Did you see anybody right before or near the time that you shot those two dudes?
No, not at all.
No. Did you remember if there was a car coming down the road at any point near or shortly before or after?
I didn't see it. It seemed like it was fairly late, you know, but there was like maybe 11 or 12
at
around
night.
That time. Yeah,
okay.
Because it seemed like the streets were pretty well deserted, you know. I mean, it was fairly late. There was hardly anybody around. I don't remember seeing any cars or anything on the road. And so it was getting, you know, I was actually fixing to leave that area too because I've been waiting so long without seeing anybody. So I decided to just go ahead and split when all of a sudden they walked up, you know. I wouldn't even know they were coming, but they were yelling on their way down the street, you know, yelling to somebody. It seemed like they might have been going to meet some other people.
Did you see which direction they came from?
Just that same way where I shot them.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the way I was facing, you know. So I figured that would be a good place to get a good shot.
Anything specific about the train trestle that you remember as far as where you positioned yourself?
Let's see. I was directly, I tried to get a view right over that sidewalk where people would be walking by. I wanted to be where I'd have a good shot, but also be where I would be concealed. You know, that was the main, concern too. One of the main concerns.
Do you recall any? Describe where your car was again. It was down on the long side of the train trestle.
No, I didn't even park it on the trestle. I just there was a little park business there that had their own parking lot.
Was there a road or a driveway that came off of the main?
It actually ran perpendicular to that road. It crisscrossed it.
Was it paved or was it?
It was paved. It was all paved, a little business. I was concerned that maybe a cop would come along and see that car there and think maybe a burglar was in progress. So I was hoping something, I was, anticipating that might occur also, And I was really concerned about that, as I should be if it was a cop, because then I would have to have a shootout right then. Or at least somebody would see it, but there was not a soul around. By the way, I usually kept a revolver with me, just in case I happen to run into a situation like that. I used to go over visualize every little detail of the of what I would be doing, beforehand, and I would also go over what I would do if this happened. Say a cop walks up and says, "What are you doing here?" Of course, I would have had to just shoot him dead right on the spot. I cared to have my .357 with me then loaded, in my waistband. So I usually didn't carry only the rifle I was using. I always had a gun with it too, just the same as in Salt Lake City, in case I got stopped by somebody else. And in the Salt Lake City case, I actually had two rifles, another loaded with a Remington loaded in the back, in case any cops were chasing me. So, but, that's basically what happened, but everything went very smoothly and not, like I said, there was not a soul around. It was just like completely deserted there, So.
Okay. Where did you, after you pulled out of the business, went down your escape route to your car, threw the rifle in the trunk. Did you stay around the area just to make sure those two people that you shot were dead?
No.
Did you?
My method, was to get out of the area as soon as possible. Yeah, that was my, the death, just to, it was just to move fast, As soon as you do something like that, get out, put as much space between you and that scene as possible, That's how I did when I left Florence, Kentucky, too. I didn't stick around the area at all. I just try to put distance between me and that area. It's just the way I operated, I didn't believe in sticking around in the area. Bank robberies, all that too. Bombings, whatever. But anyway, I just went on back to the motel room in Florence, Kentucky, and tried to get rid of that gun as soon as possible. If I'm not mistaken, I think I stayed there one more night, and left the next day. I would usually leave town right after something like that happened also. I didn't even want to take a chance on anybody who may have seen the car and got a description who I didn't see myself, But at the time, I did not have a CB. I decided, a CB is just too big of a problem for one thing, as well as a scanner, because it attracts attention, So, I've had a situation where someone tried to steal my CB before, when I was at a motel, and the alarm went off or something, and I knew, had they called the cops, And the, you know, I had to discuss with them somebody breaking into my car. They would have wanted to see my ID. And I was usually registered at hotels under different names, you know. And that would attract suspicion on me, which, I mean, they would start investigating me. So anything that might get me, cause any sort of brush with the law, I avoided. You know, I did, you know, have a CV earlier, along with a scanner, but they had become pretty much out of style by 1980 anyway. So, you know, I had one just briefly, just for a little while, and got rid of it shortly afterwards, you know, I guess around January that year. So, 77, I had one I kept for a long time, though. I used to go by the handle the Bushwhacker. You know, kind of appropriate. I heard some other people on the CB one time, when I was giving them my handle, you know, they were talking about it. They said, Bushwhacker, isn't that one of those people who waits behind bushes and shoots people? Something like that, you know.
Didn't think about that, did you?
Huh?
So did you think about that when you picked your name?
Oh, yeah, I had that in mind. I just thought it was inappropriate.
That's right.
I used several handles, though, too, when I was, you know, I had the CV. You know,
sure.
That was just one of them, you know. Like aliases, I didn't want to use the same name at all times, you know, or for very long.
Is there anything else you want to tell me now, since we have the tape going, about Cincinnati? Any other facts that you can think of?
I can't think of any offhand. Let's see. Okay. Okay, I just arrived there and found that spot. And then I went over there at night. You know, it would have been a very inappropriate place, by the way, to shoot anybody during the daytime, you know. So that's why I picked the nighttime for that one. Anyway, after running down there and just getting in a car and leaving, that's all there is to it.